Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Nice to have you here. Tremendous Wednesday to you. It is a hump day. I've got a lot of show, so let's not waste any time at all. Let's get right at it. Program today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, we are now 9 days out into the smack off. This thing is rolling downhill. That clock is spinning fast. 9 more days, which means I've got another smack off profile coming up a little bit later on. 1-800-636-8686. Go ahead and give me a call right now. I do have an interview coming up next segment. Vanderbilt pitcher Kumar Rocker is joining us. That's coming up next segment. Next hour, Minnesota Vikings safety Harrison Smith in hour number three. Arizona Diamondbacks outfielder Adam Jones. So that's coming up in the third hour. 1-800-636-8686. I've got an ATP on a Wednesday. I've got an episode of the Jim Rome podcast, which is live right now with Uriah Faber, which you want to hear. And I've got an update on Kevin Durant. According to reports, Kevin Durant flew to New York for an MRI yesterday. The expectation is the MRI is going to reveal an Achilles tear. The expectation also is Golden State will announce that news later on today. So far, nothing official. And while that's going on, another story keeps going as well, and that is, who are you going to blame for that injury? Actually, the scope of the injury was not even known before Hot Take Nation came flying in to blame the Warriors organization or the medical staff or some combination of the two. Twitter gangsters, the tough guys behind a keyboard, have now been replaced by Twitter doctors who did not even go to the trouble of printing off a fake medical degree to slap on their wall before they start to speculate furiously about medical details that we don't know and probably never will. And don't get me wrong, there are actual doctors who have Twitter accounts who can provide useful information about injuries. But even those observations are based on watching video off a phone or a computer from thousands of miles away. However, a lot of the alleged Twitter doctors are claiming that they know something that the Warriors and even Durant himself either didn't know or tried to hide, or that the Warriors and the media pressured him to play by talking about how the Warriors might be better off without him, and how some of his teammates were frustrated that he had not come back sooner, and that nobody knew if he was coming back at all. All of which would suggest that Kevin Durant, a two-time Finals MVP, was not trying to get back on the floor in time for the NBA Finals. That one of the most competitive guys ever, was saying to himself, for who? For what? For who? For what? And that the team, knowing that, had to convince him to play. Or even worse, trick him into playing. Or bully him into playing. I mean, that's what you'd have me believe. That's what you're trying to argue. Yeah, well, that doesn't work for me. And as I said yesterday, if he doesn't play in the NBA Finals and Golden State ends up losing in 5 games, what kind of heat would that guy be taking right now for not even trying? And how much of that heat would be coming from the same idiots ripping the team for allowing him to play or encouraging him to play? You know, the same people who are rushing in to claim that he got screwed would be the very same people and the first to question his competitiveness, his desire. These same people would be challenging his toughness and his heart, his willingness to lay his body on the line and be a good teammate. They'd be spewing garbage like, see, he never really was a Warrior. He was just gravy training them to a couple of rings and then bouncing for something else. A real competitor would have gone out there and would have risked his body for another ring. So everybody who's claiming to be on Team KD right now, by blaming the team or the doctors for his injury after he did play, would have had an extremely high tolerance for that same pain if he didn't play. And now that same crowd is saying that Golden State pushed him back out there and pressured him to play, or they should have held him back and protected him from himself. Yeah, well, unlike all these Twitter MDs who have no idea what the hell they're talking about, NFLer Richard Sherman, who is no stranger to an Achilles injury, does know what he's talking about. And he took to Twitter to share his thoughts on the topic. Quote, "It really frustrates me listening to current and former players act like anyone could have kept KD from playing last night. Every single athlete worth their weight dreams of playing in the championship game of their sport, and most of us are making that same decision. Hashtag stop the BS. Listen, I don't know what really went down. I don't know everything that happened. I don't know what the team told him or didn't tell him, but what Sherman says makes a hell of a lot of sense. That was not some midweek game in January. That was game 5 of the NBA Finals. Those are the moments that a competitor like Kevin Durant would live for. This guy loves the game of basketball. He loves competing. He loves winning. He's in it to stack titles. Of course, the guy wants to be out there and would do anything to be out there, and especially to be there for his teammates. You know, the same guys that so many of these idiots say that he doesn't care about. That's pretty rich. Killing a guy for not caring enough about his teammates, even though you've never spent a single second around any of them or spoken to any of them. But back to Sherm, because he was not done. Sherman said, quote, "We fully know our bodies and what we are risking, especially at the professional level. I am sure there were attempts to persuade him to continue to wait. He's built different than the people saying that he shouldn't have played. Maybe that's why they haven't gotten where he is." Sherman continued, quote, "Respect the man's heart and sacrifice. Appreciate what he tried to do for his team. At KD Trey 5, keep your head up, brother. It takes a warrior to go out there knowing what you knew. Hashtag respect comes from someone who knows personally how that felt." End quote. Nothing but respect for Durant and for Sherman for spelling it out like that. Listen, I get this. I understand. The situation sucks. It's awful to watch anybody get hurt, especially that guy suffering that injury in that moment. It really sucks to see him get hurt and to know that he may go an entire year without playing again. But at the same time, all of you riding him right now, all of you claiming to have his back and repping him so hard, what are you so upset about? You're not the one who's going to need surgery. You're not the one who's going to probably miss an entire year. You're not the one having to do the painful, lonely rehab. So why the hell are you getting so worked up? None of this happened to you. So we can argue whether or not Durant should have been out there. Although Richard Sherman would argue that any world-class athlete worth his weight would have been out there. We can argue whether or not he should have been out there. Just don't go looking to blame one person or one entity for him doing it, because you can't. There was a set of circumstances and a confluence of events that put that guy on the floor. Oh, and one more thing. He wanted to be there. At the end of the day, if he did not want to be out there, he would not have been out there. They can clear him to play, but they can't make him play. Maybe this guy took all the information that he was given, considered all the risks involved, and ultimately decided, let's do this. I'm ready. Yes, he gambled. Yes, he ultimately crapped out. Yes, it sucks. But so does blaming the GM or the coach or the organization for it happening, because there is plenty of blame to go around. Or finally, really, maybe none at all. Maybe it's a world-class athlete doing what world-class athletes do, whatever they possibly can to get back in the fight and try to win a world championship. And I respect the hell out of the guy for giving it a shot. And that should end all the questions about his competitiveness, whether or not he loves his teammates, and if he was doing everything he could to get back and rejoin the fight. Because clearly he was. And he was out there because he wanted to be. Again, I'm not saying the team handled that perfectly. I'm saying that the team, that team, would not have misled or tricked a guy like that into playing because they were on the verge of losing the series and they knew that he was going to bounce this summer. That's what I'm saying. I can't say they would do that. And unless you were in the facility for all those discussions and meeting with the team doctors yourself instead of pretending to be one on Twitter. You can't say that either. 1-800-636-8686. So as we await the official diagnosis, although we pretty much know what's coming, you can weigh in on that. 1-800-636-8686. Who do you want to blame? Or maybe is there no blame and this is just what world-class athletes do? You want to be out there. All right, on top of that, we can talk about Game 6. Can the Warriors get it done at home? And if they survive a Game 6 and they push that thing back to Toronto, can they win a Game 7 on the road without Kevin Durant? We will get into all of that. In addition to that, let's talk U.S. Open. Brooks Koepka running on rocket fuel yet again. Less than 24 hours out, 6:45 a.m. tomorrow, the first group goes off, but the first shots have already been fired. I think I might talk some U.S. women's soccer today. They put that beat down on Thailand, 13-0. And not everybody is very happy with the way the Americans were carrying themselves and carrying on, celebrating goals up 9-0, 10-0. I want to weigh in on that. Canada is really unhappy about that for some reason. And what do you know? You know that reality show involving NFL teams? No way! The Raiders made it in! Who saw that coming? Besides everybody. Hey, Rome. My gut feeling is the Stanley Cup Finals will be decided in Game 7. Signed, Ira.
If they can get tonight, I could see this thing done in 4 or 5. If not, I think it's going to go probably 6 or 7.
You mean the Stanley Cup Final? Game 7? Two best words in the world, Game 7. Casey, New Hampshire sent that. This email says, dude, where do I start? The way he broke down Biebs v. Maverick, how sick was that? And then his insight on Connor, too. What a great pod. Thanks, Rome. Well worth a listen. Ace and Chico, he's talking about Uriah Faber. It is a great pod. A great listen. One of my favorites. Make sure you check that out. Ep 85, Jim Rome Podcast, starring Uriah Faber. He's going to make his return to the Octagon in Sacktown. Once again, we are talking college baseball and more. Kumar Rocker, next segment. Vandy pitcher. Pitched a game of a lifetime. Harrison Smith, next hour. Adam Jones in hour number 3. The sun is out. The temperature's heating up, which means it is finally grilling season. This season, eat like the party never ends with Kingsford. Grill burgers, chicken, corn, brats, ribs, all kinds of food with that mouth-watering, died-and-gone-to-heaven flavor that only Kingsford can fire up. Pick up a bag of Kingsford charcoal at your local retailer. Start something big right now. It is not a party unless you're eating good, and you are not eating good unless you're eating food good with Kingsford. Kingsford charcoal. Get yourself a bag right now.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
It's a great time of year. College World Series about to get underway. I love the event. So we'll talk some college baseball right now. We are joined by a starting pitcher for Vanderbilt. He threw a no-hitter with 19 strikeouts against Duke on Saturday. Eighth no-hitter in NCAA tournament history. Vanderbilt's first no-hitter in nearly 50 years. Vanderbilt is going to the College World Series for the first time since 2015. And they're going to take on Louisville on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. We are joined by starting pitcher Kumar Rocker. Kumar, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. How are you, Mr. Rome?
Good, good. Great to talk to you. So the team is having a send-off and heading to Omaha today. Before we get to your monster game on Saturday night, kind of dial us in. What is the vibe like around the team right now, and how hyped are you to be heading to Omaha?
We're super excited. Locker room's pumped. We're all ready to get there. We had a little hype video come yesterday, and we're ready.
Nice. All right, so go back to Saturday for me. The team was coming off that tough 18-5 loss on Friday. So if you lose on Saturday, your season's over. What was your mindset going into that game?
My goal simply was just to win. I knew the seniors relied a lot on the season. They came back for a reason, and my goal is to win for them, being a freshman on this team.
All right, so the thing is, the game did not get off to a great start. You hit a batter in the first inning. Your head coach, Tim Corbin, said the way you responded to that was a critical moment in the game. How did you make sure that that moment did not get inside your head, maybe rattle you a little bit? How did you refocus as quickly as you did?
Just from previous games. I've seen games where that's happened in big games like that, and I knew I had to come back strong the next couple innings.
All right, now you get late into the game, and I know you talked about the eighth inning being a big moment for you, and I'll get to that, but your breaking ball was really nasty. For example, Patrick Mahomes tweeted, quote, "That man's slider is nasty," end quote. When did you realize he had something good going with that breaking ball, and how big of a role did it play in that performance?
After I hit that guy, the lefty came up. I threw two, and it was a pretty easy swing and miss on him. And after that inning, my catcher came in and said, "Your breaking ball is really tight tonight." I said, "I don't jinx it." And then from then, it was a good breaking ball all night.
Kamar Rocker is joining us. Hey, look, it's one thing to throw a no-hitter, but that was a no-hitter with 19 strikeouts in a game that was 1-0 going into the eighth. In other words, if you make any mistake at any point, that game can get blown wide open with a single swing. So how'd you stay focused in that situation and to make sure that you got locked in for every single batter? Like, did you shut out the pressure or did you try to embrace it?
There's moments in the game that I did embrace it. I did take a look around the stadium a couple of times, and there's also moments where I was just locked in, trying to get an out.
Now, two outs in the seventh inning, Duke calls a timeout. I mean, theoretically, maybe they want to talk strategy, right? Maybe. Or maybe that was kind of about freezing you and getting you out of your rhythm. It seemed like it fired you up more than anything else. What was your reaction to that timeout, and then how pumped were you to respond by striking out the hitter?
I've seen it happen before, and he did it in a really crucial time where it was really in my face, and I kind of took it as in my face, as you can see from the video. And it just gave me more momentum to strike out that next hitter.
Kamar Rocker is joining us. A no-hitter, 19 strikeouts, and Vanderbilt's getting ready for the College World Series. In the top of the eighth, you get a couple of runs. You take a 1-0 game. You make it a 3-0 lead. But you said the eighth was actually the toughest one to pitch. What was going through your mind in the eighth? How were you able to power through that?
That eighth was the first time I've ever gone eight times up and down. The most I've ever been is seven innings, so that eighth was definitely a new thing for me. The body, from the arms to my just legs in general.
So what do you do with that? I mean, do you will yourself through that? How did you get through that when you had not been there before?
Just focusing every pitch, really. That's really it. I don't know what to tell you.
I hear you. So in the ninth inning, not only did you not look tired, you actually look fresh. You strike out the side. What were you feeling in that inning?
I felt the crowd stand up. I felt the momentum come to me and the adrenaline start going. And the crowd, the fans, my teammates definitely helped me get through that moment.
You know, when you're in that moment and you got the adrenaline, it's one thing. But then you get that final strikeout, you know that you not only kept your season alive, but you made history with arguably the greatest NCAA tournament performance ever. How did you feel coming off the mound? How would you describe that feeling?
When it happened, I was in utter shock. I had no idea what I did. I knew it won the game, and I'm glad it was over. And then after that, they let me talk to the fans and show my face, and I guess that's when it really hit, the next couple days.
Kamar Rocker is joining us. Now, the no-hitter is amazing, but how special was it for you to come through with the team, for the team, when you needed it? You start this conversation off by saying, "I want to do this for the seniors more than anything else. I'm a freshman." What did it mean to come through in that moment when the team needed it so badly?
I was hoping in that moment, with that energy that we had Saturday night, that next Sunday, the team would be able to roll through them, and they did exactly what I thought they'd do.
And after the game, David Price jumped on Twitter. He said, quote, "Wow, with a loss tonight, Vanderbilt season's over. Kamar Rocker decided he would throw a no-hitter and punch out 19. To be able to step up that way as a freshman is inspiring. I tip my hat to you, sir," end quote. It's always been a big David Price house here. What did it mean to get that kind of love and respect from a Vanderbilt legend like Price?
I mean, those guys like Price, also being an African-American, they set the path for me and other black players, and as well as Vanderbilt players, and just the recognition of him was a huge honor.
Now, a lot of people remember your dad, Tracy Rocker. He was an amazing yep. D lineman at Auburn. He was in Knoxville for the game. He was hosting recruits as part of his job with the Tennessee football staff, but he kept sneaking peeks at his phone and to see what you were doing. The story goes, after the game, you, your mom, and your dad were on the phone until late in the night. What was that conversation like?
He was congratulating me, of course. He did say something key earlier. During the start of the season, I struggled a lot. And he kept me calm with the mental state of mind of just, you're going to peak at the right time. And come to find out, he was right.
He called his shot. Now, when you made that decision about college, what was it about Vanderbilt that made you feel like that was the right place?
Like everyone says, the education, the people, the city, the program Corbin has here is just, it's second to none. There's college baseball, and then there's Vanderbilt baseball, and I think there's a huge difference between those two.
Now, you're a freshman, and you said the season's really about the seniors. You're along for the ride. What do you mean by that, and how would you describe the culture and the chemistry of that team? What's that like?
Each and every day through practice, we sit there and we look at those seven seniors and see what they have to do in sort of us. We follow them, and they've done everything in their power to keep us here and get us here. So it's just us to just stay along for the ride and do what we can to help their role.
He is a starting pitcher with Vanderbilt, a no-hitter with 19 strikeouts against Duke on Saturday. And Vanderbilt plays Louisville on Sunday. That's their first trip to the World Series since 2015. Kumar Rocker, my guest. Kumar, great to have you on, man. Thanks so much. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Nothing like needing to win to keep your season alive and throwing a no-hitter and punching out 19. College World Series is a blast. 1-800-PING! I'm not going. I get that every single year. You coming? You coming, Rome? You coming? I wish I could. It's a busy time of year. Can't make it out there, but I will be tracking it, following it, talking about it. And got you a little preview right there. 19 strikeouts in a no-hitter. And Mailman Casey tweets, I'm going to bet Dr. Dave has a diagnosis on Durant. Too bad he wouldn't be able to get through a call to let you in on his knowledge.
While you spend your time perfecting the perfect selfie, I spend my day recovering, saving dying children. Oh, sorry, Jim. I'm done.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
So this guy, Dr. Dave in Chicago, says that he works with terminally ill children. Never mind that he can't get through a telephone call to a sports talk show. You're going to entrust that guy to care for your child, a really sick child, a terminally ill child. He can't get through a phone call to me, but he's going to treat your kid. Have fun with that. But then again, my man, talking to you right now, or talking to you when you're on your show, you don't come off much more credible than all those other Twitter doctors that there are. Like I'm saying, when Durant went down, all of a sudden there were lots and lots of doctors on Twitter suddenly. The former Twitter gangsters turned into Twitter doctors. A Table Slam fan tweets, Jimothy, nobody gets pressured into athletic endeavors by the company brass or Twitter warriors. Regards, Hawks Marathon Stunt. I did not put him up to that. Nobody here or back in New York pressured Hawk into doing that. Hawk makes all of his own decisions. Generally, they're terrible decisions, but he makes them himself. I did not pressure him to run a marathon. I did not pressure him to get a tattoo of his cat. I didn't pressure him to grow that porn stash. I didn't pressure Hawk to do any of the stupid things he's done. That's all on him. I'm not saying that Kevin Durant did not feel pressure. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying to say that the organization or the GM or the head coach pressured this guy into playing in a game that he didn't want to play, I think is garbage. I don't know exactly what they told him or what they didn't tell him. I don't know how much pressure he felt. I'm saying he probably did feel pressure, but from a lot of different places. A confluence of events. Hey, one more thing about Kevin Durant. Listen, the thing about this guy is he's one of the best to ever do it. He's one of the most competitive guys I've ever seen. My man does possess, however, a set of rabbit ears. All right? He can get pretty thin-skinned. He can be pretty sensitive. We've seen him get trolled hard. I've seen him get hooked online. So I think he's pretty aware of what was being said about him. And you heard all the nonsense about him. And I call it nonsense because the guy did go out there and try to play. And look what happened. You know, but things being said about how he didn't want to be out there. He really wasn't all that competitive. The guy could have been out there. He's not one of them. He's not there for his teammates. He's only thinking about his free agency. I'm sure he heard all of that criticism because he kind of has that set of rabbit ears. I say that because I've seen him respond and get hooked by people who don't matter. He may have felt pressure, but if he did, I'm saying there was a whole hell of a lot of pressure that he may have felt, and not just from, quote, the GM or the organization. Now, could the team have handled this differently? Maybe. Probably. Did the team say to him, you cannot get injured any worse if you do give it a shot? Maybe. Probably. But I'm here to tell you, a guy like that does not take the floor in that situation after a month off without taking all the information in. Listening to the team, then sitting with his own team, his own camp, weighing the pros and cons and thinking it through and then making that decision. Again, they can clear him to play, but they can't make him play. He wouldn't have been out there if he didn't want to be out there. And I go back to what Richard Sherman said. Any world championship or world-class athlete worth his weight with a chance to play for a world championship is going to do the same thing. Sherman said it. I'm disappointed. And notice he wasn't talking about Twitter doctors or Twitter eggs. He said, I'm disappointed in athletes and former athletes that are taking runs at this guy because they know that we would do that. Romy. I can't wait for those Canadian soccer broadcasters who ripped the U.S. women's national team for scoring 13 goals to call in on the Monday after the smack-off with some crappy take on how badly the American callers treated those two bums. John and Wisco, war running up the score. You mean Tyler and Matt? You mean those two bum asses? Don't sleep on those two. I think they're going to show up big. But we'll find out. The smack-off is now exactly 9 days out. Coming up next hour, Minnesota Vikings safety Harrison Smith, Adam Jones of the Diamondbacks in hour number three. I've already had a few of you reference the Uriah Faber podcast. It's really good. Really good. When we come back, the Raiders get their own reality show. The Raiders are their own reality show. I don't think there's anything new or anything to uncover here, but I'll do my best. Keep an open mind. Bottom of hour number one, let's get you a sports update. Here is the very latest. Andrew.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Today would be a very good day to ask the pros. In fact, every Wednesday is. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Do this. Go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Ask your question there. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All this talk, all this hype, all this energy behind the silver anniversary smack-off. And you all think that I'm overlooking another silver anniversary, don't you? I'm not overlooking it. I'm ignoring it. Or doing my best to do so, but it's not working because you keep hammering me and filling my inbox with things like this. Happy 25th, Jay. Here's to another silver anniversary. Hoping for another 25, my man. Only positive thoughts today. Your guy, Oj. Signed, still tirelessly looking for the killers. And I had nothing to do with Bill Walsh's death. Love the show.
Juice, can you hear me, Juice?
Yes, I can hear you, buddy.
Yeah, remember when you played for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you kill Bill Walsh?
That I was what?
He said, did you kill Bill Walsh? Again, whose idea was it to not only put O.J. Simpson on a radio program or an internet radio program or whatever it was, but to open it up to phone calls?
Hi, good show, dude.
Whose idea was that?
My kid Chris was wondering, do you think it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in one season or slice two necks in one night?
I'm having a little trouble, Kevin, hearing you.
No, you're not, Juice. You heard him. You heard that perfectly, Juice. Again, the question. Whose idea was it to sit OJ down for a live interview and bang telephone calls? I'll tell you. A genius. The smartest person ever. Let me tell you something. If I ever get into the Radio Hall of Fame, if I ever do, I may give the honor to whoever it was who set that interview up and got telephone calls. How about that guy faking his voice? Hey, Juice! Hey, Juice, remember when you played for the 49ers? Yeah. Well, how could I forget that? Did you kill Bill Walsh?
Juice, can you hear me, Juice?
Yes, I can hear you, buddy.
Yeah, remember when you played for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you kill Bill Walsh?
That I was what?
Did I was what? She should have said, Juice, focus. He said, did you kill Bill Walsh? It's a yes or no question, really. Did you? How about George Seifert? How about John Brody? No, we're not doing this. Stop sending me your happy 25th J anniversaries. We're not doing it. We're not going to give this the same treatment as the smack off. There's not going to be any golden tickets for any would-be murderers. I'm not going to have the smacky choppa run into Nicole. We're not going to have watch parties for AC and Oj on that slow speed chase rolling down the 405. We're not doing this.
Ron and Nicole.
I know what happened 25 years ago. All right? I'm ignoring it. As I've tried to ignore every one last of your tweets, texts, emails, phone calls, and faxes. All of them since it happened. Something else that's getting a little bit of a reset today. The return yesterday of Nice Radio. Nice, Jamie and Green Bay tweets. Nice Radio. Now, Jim, saying all the things that Hawk does are stupid isn't nice. You're right, but it isn't nice. You're right. We did do that yesterday. Dear Jim, if Kevin Durant had seen one of us, this would have never happened. Signed, Chiropractors. Paul in Albany wore Randall, being in the background of the Mississippi Queen interview.
Yeah!
I don't think that was him. I've seen him in my bushes. I've seen him hiding out. I've seen him stalking. I don't think that he was there for that. I don't. All right, so listen, this is the last time that you can call to get into the smack off. I think I've made it pretty clear. If you're not in yet, you're probably not going to get in. Phone lines have been open. You've got 9 days. Until the event itself. But I would say this. I'm not looking to give away any more golden tickets. But if you're holding on to a golden ticket, you need to do better than you're doing right now. That's not guaranteed to get you on the air. Remember that. Meantime, Adam Hawk did tell me that the person who was part of the interview with Oj is somebody that Hawk worked for. Adam, go ahead. Pick those up real quick. So I've been so focused not on the host of that program, but on the guest of that program and the callers to that program. But you know the host who sat down for that interview.
Yeah, her name is Kate Delaney. She's a legend, one of the nicest people I've ever worked with. She deserves a lot of credit for that because she could have pulled the plug on it at any time, but she just let OJ sit there and keep taking phone calls. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and he just sat there and kept pretending to not being able to hear or understand anything they were saying when we all understood it and heard it.
Yeah, she did a great job anchoring that program.
Did
no
you
doubt.
Ever ask her about that?
No, I didn't. I was a young, green radio producer, and I felt that it was not... I hadn't earned the right to ask her about that.
Dude, now you're old and green. If you were young and green, and you make the mistakes you make right now, I can only imagine what you were like back then.
I can't believe I made it this far, honestly.
I can't believe you're still here, honestly. All right, man. Thanks for nothing. All right, so Hawk actually worked for Kate Delaney, and Kate Delaney was there for that infamous interview. And she did do a very good job trying to keep that train on the tracks. What did he say? You heard what he said, Juice. He said, did you kill Bill Walsh?
Guys, let's go to Kevin, I believe, in New Jersey. Kevin, what's your question for OJ?
Hi, good show, dude. My kid Chris was wondering, do you think it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in one season or slice two necks in one night?
I'm having a little trouble, Kevin, hearing you.
That's a lie. No, you're not.
Right, Alex is listening to us in Ohio. Hey,
you knew
Alex.
His name, Kevin.
Yes.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Not good.
Why are you
can
not
you hear
good?
Me, Juice?
You're
yes,
not good.
Yes, I can hear you, buddy.
Yeah. Remember when you played for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you kill Bill Walsh?
That I was what?
Hey, how are you doing?
Not good, Brett.
Hey, OJ, I had a question for you. You know, with everything that Michael Vick has been going through and being indicted, I was just wondering if you wanted to meet me on the Jersey Shore to do live.
Yep, there we go. You know, you're going to get jokers, but that's the great thing. It's
well,
it's
that's, no, I don't mind. I mean, you know, people can say what if it's negative or what, as long as they're serious about the question mm-hmm. they're asking.
Well, they're serious.
It's easier to tell a joke, but it don't bother me.
That's rich. You killed two people, but that doesn't bother you. Of course it doesn't bother you, Juice. You're still alive.
Oh.
Why would it bother you?
Brian and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost like they killed me.
You clones happy? There's your 25th silver anniversary. Are you happy? I acknowledged it. I gave you what you want. I did the one thing that I always say that I will not do. Give you what you want. What's good for you is not good for me. What's good for you is not good for the show. Are you happy? Good show, dude. Who was that directed to? Not Kate? To the Juice? It's not his show. No, clones. Don't hashtag /off25. I've never really understood that I'm the host of this here show. You're the listeners of this show, and yet you all find stuff funny that I would never find amusing. And we all still work together. How does that work? How are you listening to the same show that I'm doing when you find crap like that funny and I don't? And yet it works, right? Wouldn't you think that if we didn't see the same stuff that was funny, you wouldn't listen, or I wouldn't embrace you? Yet here we are. Here the bleep we are.
Here we are.
So what I'm saying is no, we're not going to go hashtag /off25. You know why we're not doing that? One, it's not funny. Two, it's not appropriate. I don't know. I'm weird like that. I don't think murder is funny. I don't think double murder is cool. I'm really funny like that. But are you happy? You got over. You won. You got me to do it. Charlie in Goochland is in. He tweets, have Garrett Ritt reach out to the Juice to be the next podcast guest.
It's lit.
We do need another podcast guest for next week. Ritt is chasing, but not that guy. Stucknut's in. So, Hawk worked for the OJ interview host and the first Smack-Off winner. Damn, that's impressive. That's not all. He did. He did work for the OJ interview host. He did work for the first Smack-Off winner. He did work for LA sports legend, Fred Rogan.
Impressive.
He also worked for Rodney Harrison. Pick him up again, Hawk, really quickly. Dude, for a guy who's really not that gifted, you've worked for a lot of gifted people. How did you pull all those jobs?
And you're
how
forgetting
the hell are you here?
You're forgetting Donovan McNabb too.
Donovan McNabb,
oh yeah,
Rodney Harrison,
hello,
JT, Fred Rogan, the lady who did the OJ interview,
Kate Delaney,
me, Hawk. How do you do this? You don't really bring anything significant to it.
Amani Toomer.
Wow, dude,
it's been a hell of a run.
It really has. Hope you've enjoyed yourself. Probably shouldn't have had that second kid. All right, we're coming right back, and when we do, damn, Hawk's resume is way better than I thought. Harrison Smith, next hour. Adam Jones in the third hour. The Raiders have themselves a TV show. U.S. women's soccer team lights up Thailand, and not everybody was happy to see it. And you want to listen to Uriah Faber. That's a really good podcast. All that coming up. Don't go anywhere.